Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
Welcome to this week's PR Moment podcast. And today we're chatting to 3Monkeys Zeno UK Managing Director Joe Patterson about the encouraging trend of more female leaders occupying the big agency roles, I should say, in the UK. When Joe and I were chatting about this in our pre-show chat, it got us thinking, and I've put together a bit of a non-exhaustive, I must emphasise that, non-exhaustive list. I'm sure there's people I've forgotten or left out, so apologies in advance for that. But a non-exhaustive list of the top female PR agency leaders in the UK. We've obviously got Joe, who we're chatting to today at 3Monkeys Zeno, Joanne Robinson at Ketchum, Joe Carr at Hope and Glory. I've got all the Joes out of the way first. Then we've got Nicola Todd at Ogilvy PR, Pippa Arlo at Smarts, Ruth Kieran at Circle, Ruth Allchurch at We, Sian Morgan at Cow, Sharon Bange at Kindred, Rebecca Grant at BCW, Ali Maynard at Manifest, Kath Herring at Taylor Herring, Angie Moxham at The Fourth Angel, Kate Stevens at Axicom, Georgina Blizzard and Nikki Riganzoni at the PR Network, Mandy Sharp at Tin Man, Emma Kane at Newgate, Vanella Gray at Port Novelli, and of course, Bibby Hilton at Creative Access. So there's a lot there, and there's a lot of really, really talented women occupying those big CEO roles within the UK PR agency scene. And as I say, there's loads more I could mention, but you get my point. There seem to be more female leaders in the top agency positions than there have been in recent memory, perhaps even ever before. And one of the things Joe and I will talk about on the show today is the potential reasons for that. A bit of background on 3Monkeys Zeno, for those of you that are not aware, in the UK, has an income of about £9 million and about 80 employees. Zeno started out many years ago as Edelman's conflict shop, but it's grown into a global agency with a fee income of about £150 million and about 70% or thereabouts, I'm sort of estimating there, of Zeno's revenues are in the US. Joe became UK MD of 3Monkeys Zeno in October 2020. Previously, she was UK MD at Port Novelli and a board director at Red. Zeno bought 3Monkeys in 2016. I always think of Zeno as a fairly new agency, but for any PR agency history buffs out there, it was founded in 1998. Before we start, we've got another one of our webinars coming up, The State of Social in 2023, a cracking programme, and this one's free to attend, so do check out the homepage of prmoment.com to register for that. And thanks, as ever, so much to the PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for inviting me.
An absolute pleasure. Great to have you on. So do you agree with this this hypothesis that, to be fair, we both sort of put together, that we're seeing more female PR agency CEOs at the moment than we have done previously?
Yes, I do. And I was just listening to that list as you read it out and sort of ticking off many of those women who I have grown up with and been fortunate enough to work with. Some of them, we were account managers in the trenches together many years ago. And what is absolutely thrilling, I don't think I've ever heard it listed off like that before, at like a roll call, to realise just how many have gone on into significant leadership roles. Vanella Gray, Bibby Hilton, Rebecca Grant, I've all worked with in previous lives. But there's still obviously a lot more to do. I think we are making significant progress. And when I started, compared to that list you read out, there were definitely trailblazers. So, you know, the likes of Jackie Cooper, who's obviously still very active in the industry. I think Alison Clark, who I've watched from afar, who is admirable. Leslie Brend, who co-founded Red, who I had the privilege of working with for 7 or 8 years. Or you've got to see it to be it. And they were the forerunners, I think, for the generation who are now stepping up into those leadership roles. But there's still more to do. And apropos of our conversation the other day, I, you know, went off and noodled onto some of the stats. And based on sort of rough data that I've sort of picked up mostly from the PRCA, even though around about 60-70% of the employee base in the industry is female, we're still only tracking at around about 40%, 42% for leadership roles. So has progress been made? Absolutely. Is there more to do? Absolutely. And I suspect we'll be talking more about parity a little bit later on.
Yeah, we'll come on to that, shall we? Let's stay positive for now. Just is that I don't know, is it a trend? But the number of female leaders that have come through, clearly that, you know, that COVID and the flexible working that, that came from that period, to what extent has that helped? But you know, clearly all those people we talked about there were doing, had fantastic careers long before COVID came along. So what do you put that down to? I guess it's a long-term and short-term trends wrapped up in that, is it?
I mean, obviously COVID was a crucible that we all sort of fell into and made it up as we went along. And I just scratched my head at times around the sort of binary nature of how we describe female leadership traits and male leadership traits. I love one day if we get to gender neutral leadership traits and they're just great traits. That's the aim and the ambition. But, you know, there is this sense and appreciation that women have a bigger empathetic muscle, perhaps more intuitive. We saw that in Jacinda Ardern and, you know, the way she handled her premiership over the 5-year period she was in office. And those instinctive, intuitive traits absolutely come to the fore when you're dealing with something so traumatic and deeply personal and human as we did throughout COVID. And I think now what happens next will be really interesting. If all of the gains that were made in terms of the recognition around different leadership traits that all of these women undoubtedly are espousing, if we can maintain that and continue to be authentic is a word that is often used, and vulnerable is a word that is often used. I think there's still a little bit of stigma around those words. I think some people lean into it easier than others, but is it the right modus operandi for any progressive agency dealing with complex issues and multi-generational workforces the way we are now? You know, I was thinking about my employee base. We go from about 20 up to mid to late 50s with different attitudes, different cultural contexts. You've got to be able to navigate all of that stuff. And those classic female traits, and I'm not saying men don't have them because many of them do, but I think they absolutely do lend themselves well to the current circumstances that we find ourselves in. You know, we've gone from health crisis to existential crisis to the Great Resignation and now to a cost of living crisis. All of those things need a really intuitive radar, and I think that helps with female leadership generally cementing that new set of values that as an industry I think we've been pretty good at promoting.
Sure. I mean, just looking at, as you're talking there, I was thinking about the companies that those women work at, and you know, I don't want to make this too men v women, if you see what I mean, because there's plenty of men where companies where men are CEOs that are also growing. But those companies that we looked at there, as I read them out, you know, they are all growing and successful companies, aren't they, if you see what I mean? I mean, PR's had a good couple of years, but there is there's a lot of success going on there.
Absolutely. And as you say, it takes a village, right? And that applies to any organization and any business. And I don't think it's so much about an individual. An individual can be helpful as a catalyst, as a driver, as an instigator, but it's also about the environment and the culture that surrounds you and how that seeps through the sort of DNA of an organization, right through every single level. That's important. And it's the people you surround yourself with. And it's also, quite frankly, your own bosses espousing what it is you're trying to do. And so where you've seen progress, I think it's a combination of all of those things. Charismatic leaders who are prepared to stand up and, you know, shape their agencies and their businesses the way they would like, but having the freedom to do that and the vision to do that. And, you know, the holding companies, as you say, you know, Mark Read at WPP, I think is a great example of setting up a culture from the very top that enables that to happen. So it's a combination of forces, but the female leadership role and the women at the heart of them are absolutely crucial because they set the tone. They set the tone, they set the agenda, they give people agency over their agency. So they are absolutely critical in the role, but it is part of a wider ecosystem, I think.
Right. And it's interesting that this period is sort of the rise of brilliant women lead female leaders in PR has sort of, it's overlapped with a period of time in society when we've probably seen a rise of misogyny, haven't we, really, over the past few years, and a bit of an upward trend of, oh, no, frankly, obnoxious macho culture. And it's I suppose there is a danger that overlaps, does it, into the PR world, into the professional cultures that we live and work in?
It is worrying, I have to say, and I speak as a mom as well as an industry agency leader to see this manifest in so many ways. And you know, after my generation, certainly sort of in the 80s and 90s, we fought for career equality, we fought for equal opportunity, and I think we made great strides. And now some of the things I see do worry me. So even just this week, there was, I don't know if you're all over TikTok, but trends on TikTok are manifesting in interesting ways. So the notion of vanilla girls, whose world are beautifully curated through sort of a lens of beige and white, and it's all about perfection and having a lovely life. Stay-at-home girlfriends, a similar sort of trend. But then when you look at manifestations elsewhere, the political sort of nonsense of last year, I mean, quite frankly, watching porn in the chamber is not a great look. I think the rise of phenomenon like Andrew Tate is, I scratch my head at that. I just don't get it. And incel culture worries me. I have a boy and a girl, both in their teens. So I'm conscious that there are warring factions at play here. There are, there's the narrative around, you know, go out, grab it, own it, be who you are in with safety and respect. And then there is this other vibe that's going on, which to me feels retrogressive.
And I don't quite know where it's come from, because it's definitely there, but I couldn't quite tell you why it started. I haven't quite worked that one out.
Yeah. And I think from a work perspective, to answer your question, we have to continue to keep our eye on the ball when it comes to, you know, making progressive steps forward. I think COVID has impacted many, many people at work. We focus generally when we talk about COVID and impact on the junior sort of teams, the people who haven't had that osmosis and that training and that desk side sort of coaching. But I think it's impacted in all sorts of ways. You know, at mid-level, for example, one of the key muscles you need is to be able to stand up in front of a room and sell your services, sell your ideas, sell your vision as an agency and the impact you want to make for clients. But when you don't practice that, you don't have the opportunity to be in a room. It's a muscle that can waste away quite easily.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And I think it's taking us a little bit of time now to see the slower impact of COVID on the skills, the capabilities, the confidence of the people we work with. And now we've got to sort of supercharge that, get it back up to the levels that it was before.
Yeah, so I've become even more boring since I've seen less people during COVID. But bring it back to PR. How do we, I've identified this really interesting and positive trend of some fantastic female leaders. How do we, and bearing in mind what's going on in society with misogyny and some things we definitely don't want to see, how do we make sure we don't lose the gains that we've made
good question. I think there are some practical things you can do, and then there's sort of philosophical things for want of a better word. And when I think about the gains we've made, the positives post-COVID, particularly, it's things like, you know, this won't come as a surprise to you, flexible working. I think more support for parents, especially moms. I think geographical flexibility has been a big trend and is here to stay. I think greater recognition for and protection for some of the sort of challenging life stages that people go through as well. You know, we've talked a lot about the menopause of late, but there are issues that are impacting people throughout their career. Fertility treatments or carers. I think being cognizant and much more supportive of that. And what COVID did, back to your point about positivity, was I think it just brought out the human in us. And it's important to make sure that we don't lose those gains. So, for example, enshrining policies into governance. It sounds like such an obvious thing to do, but committing to the things that you want to progress. I think updating your policies beyond the statutory, signing industry-wide commitments, the Menopause Workplace Pledge is a great one. And big businesses have signed that. Channel 4, Tesco, the BBC have all signed up to that, and an important statement. But then you've got to try it and you've got to live it and you've got to talk about it and you've got to acknowledge the successes and the failures. And There were two things that stayed with me. We introduced last year a policy around compressed hours, which essentially is where you work a 5 day week over four. And I remember talking about it, you know, with a couple of people at work going, "Oh, well, you know, what does it mean for the Fridays? And we're a service industry, and you know, da 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 da." And all of the old tropes that were my own sort of prejudice getting in the way. And I put it to one side, and we did it, and it worked brilliantly. And you know, the woman who is working like that now is so much happier. There's been no issue in terms of any of the things that I thought were going to be, you know, problematic. And so we move forward and we enshrine it. So you've got to try, you've got to test, you've got to talk about it, and you've got to acknowledge it. And then the other thing, the menopause one, because I know this is a hot topic for many, probably, of the women that you listed at the beginning of the podcast, because probably quite a few of us are going through it right now. And I remember last year for the PR Week Power Book thingy, you have to, the first question is always describe your year in 5 words or 3 words or whatever. I think it, next year will probably be one word. And it was 5 years last year. And I riffed off the letter M, and I can't remember everything, but I did say, I think, magical mayhem. And then the last word was menopause. And I was telling a friend about writing that. And she was like, "Well, why did you say that? Why in a very public facing, you know, piece of literature that people read, why did you say it?" And I was surprised at that reaction, because you've got to say it to get it out there. And so you've then got to commit, I think, to the things that you believe in and not be afraid to talk about them. And that's what I see in many of the female leaders that you listed, that absolute commitment to grasp the nettle and to get it out there.
Openness and confidence are they go hand in hand, don't they? I think in many ways.
Completely, completely.
Just looking back at your career, and I think you kind of touched on it, what you just said, really. But both at Red and Zeno, you've had amazing role models, haven't you?
Yes.
In leadership positions, which I think is kind of what a lot of this is about, isn't it? Is creating those role models. But just talk us through how those role models have helped you.
So I think there were probably three. And I don't know whether to name names or just sort
Go
of,
for
and
it. Go on.
I
Yeah,
will,
do it.
because
Do
yeah,
it.
okay, I then will. So the first was Leslie Brand, who was the co-founder of Red, and I joined Red in the mid-90s. It was going through a huge purple patch. The creativity and the award wins were just brilliant. It was a brilliant place to be. And I think in every career there's probably an agency or an organization where you find your tribe, and Red was definitely part of that for me. And Leslie worked brilliantly with David Fuller. She would sit at the top of an old Georgian building in Wimpole Street and just weave magic. And so it was her intellectual capability that was really inspiring, and the fact that she just made stuff happen, and the quality of her thinking and how she articulated her thought really inspired, I think, all of us. And many people at Red have gone on to stay in the industry, and I think we suckled at the teat of Leslie Brand, for want of a better phrase, and absorbed that and went on to harness it throughout our careers. Bibby and Rebecca Grant being just two of them. The next one was probably Fenella Gray, who you name checked earlier. Fen and I worked at Porter for 5 years together. She's a whirlwind. The energy sort of sparks out of her fingers, and I learned a lot from her in terms of having a vision, being able to express it, and energy and resilience. She's still there. She's going great guns. And I have utmost respect for her. And then the third one is Barbie Siegel, who's the global CEO of Zeno. And she was really one of the reasons I joined. I was having conversations throughout the COVID period. She was very respectful of that. But she has built a leadership team as well around her that is very female oriented. Our COO is female. Our head of purpose is female. Our creative global lead is female, which is rare. And our senior planner is female. And don't get me wrong, I'm not looking not to work with men. I really like working with men. I like working with good people, regardless of gender. But seeing that and how Barbie had inculcated that was a major reason why I decided to join.
And how's Zeno doing, both globally and the UK? Is it
Yeah,
because it's gone through
globally.
some interesting
Yeah.
times post, especially in the UK, I guess, post the Three Monkeys acquisition.
Yes, yeah. I mean, great guns. I mean, like any agency, we have our ups and downs. I think it's feeling a bit volatile at the moment, with everything that's going on. But we are so heading towards the 9 million mark in revenue, which is significant. We've had 2 years of double-digit growth, and the headcount is growing, and we moved offices. So, all of the metrics I think that I am tasked with looking after are moving in the right direction. And globally too, the business has performed brilliantly in the last couple of years. Again, significant double-digit growth. We're currently Global Agency of the Year, but I won't bang on about that because, it is what it is. But
Do you have much to do with Edelman? Is it, are you literally just, it's kind of totally different businesses, if you see what I mean? Is there much chat between the two?
no, very little, very distinct.
Okay.
The blue and the green have a very different vibe and a different culture. The nature of the work overlaps to a certain extent, but is also different in many respects. So no, I watch Edelman from afar and admire what they do in many ways, but the Zeno brand is very distinct, deliberately so. We plough our own furrow, let's put it that
Right.
way.
And in the UK, I mean, Three Monkeys, we're going back a few years now, was very much known for its consumer work. How's that evolved since the acquisition then?
I think absolutely when I obviously grew up watching Three Monkeys burn brightly for so long. One of those agencies that when you're up against them on a pitch list, it was like, oh no, really? And that what remains, I think, what is still embedded in the agency, even with the Zeno element coming in, is that inherent curiosity. That Angie named the agency for a reason. And for me, there was a curiosity, a playfulness, a collaboration to it, a sort of energy to it when you think about what that name means. And there was a fearlessness to it and a bravery. That element of the agency is still alive and kicking. And it's under my stewardship. I'm very cognitive and aware of that, making sure that it remains at the heart of who we are and what we do, even as we embrace, being part of a network. About 50% of our work now is global. So the shift has been about the scale and the geography of the work. And also the nature of the sectors. So we have a growing corporate reputation practice. Our healthcare practice is growing with Avril Lee at the helm. We have a digital practice. We have a tech practice. So I think the sense of Three Monkeys as a consumer tech shop, absolutely it was. But now, as part of Zeno, we are multi-sector, multi-dimensional, working with big, complex clients the way any holding company agency is.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're the first leader of Three Monkeys Zeno in London who hadn't come from the sort of original, from a Three Monkeys background, if you see what I mean. Do you think that was an advantage or a disadvantage for you?
Yeah, I was. And, as per what I was saying a couple of minutes ago, it's something that you have to treat with respect and just be careful with it. You have to be careful with it because the agency was and is built on that creative reputation, and was sort of, incredibly well known. And so coming in with a fresh perspective, it challenged my assumptions about what the agency is today, and enabled me, I think, maybe not to have the legacy that might sort of get in the way. It enables you to think about what comes next rather than what was. And having that perspective is really important, in terms of being able to grow, being able to develop and push the agency into different directions. But always with an eye and a respectful sort of glance over the shoulder at what it was, getting the balance right, I think, is key. And I've got people around me as well, back to the point about great leaders and leadership teams. Some of my LT have been with the agency for 10, 12 years. They have a really strong understanding of how the agency progressed over time. Others are new, others only joined in the last 2 or 3 years. And that amalgamation of both perspectives is really helpful.
Yeah, I think you always need that mix, don't you, of experienced hands and new blood, with, for want of a better phrase, within an agency
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
culture. I mean, just think about, I don't want to, the Three Monkeys Zeno merger was a while back, but it's an interesting one. Just that there's so many acquisitions that haven't gone particularly well. How much do you try and integrate the new the bought agency into the wider culture, and how much do you just try and let it live in its own glorious isolation?
mean, obviously, I wasn't there at the time, Ben. So, I can only give you a retrospective.
Yeah, I meant as a, I meant as a,
As
I
general,
wouldn't,
in
you weren't there,
general.
and I know that. So I meant as a wider point rather than trying to drill down into that case study, if you like.
No, I get you. Oh, I mean, I think, and there's been a lot of M&A sort of activity over the last few years. And I, from a principal perspective, I suspect, in terms of how I would approach it, I think you have to be straight away cognizant of the DNA of both agencies and both organizations. You have to know what it is that you're buying, not just in terms of the commercials and the spreadsheets, but the culture is so important. And for there to be a match between those two entities, there's no point trying to mash up, trying to think an apple and a pear. Really, you're looking for sort of two apples, and that's not a great analogy, but you know what I mean. And then I think size is important and scale. You don't want, as I would imagine, a smaller entity to feel like you're being subsumed. So getting that right, I think the leadership and the structures would be incredibly important, and making sure people can see progression. And the rationale for any entities coming together, and the benefits, the long-term benefits that people will get. And then you've got to work through the entire process of it. And as you say, I've seen it work, and I've seen it fail. I've seen it failed in organizations I've been in, and it hasn't worked as far as I can see, often because the leadership team of the agency that's come in perhaps hasn't quite pulled on the same rope. So everything has got to match. It sounds incredibly complicated, doesn't it? But at the end of the day, it's a group of people.
Yeah, I it just got me thinking. I did chat to somebody about this, and I should definitely not name this person. It wouldn't be fair. And it wasn't anything to do with the Three Monkeys Zeno merger, just to emphasize that. But what he was alluding to was that actually, if you buy an agency and you manage to take some of the big clients global, and you manage to retain some good people, actually, that might be the principal objective of an acquisition. So they do come in. I mean, obviously that wasn't the principal acquisition of Zeno's, sorry, principal objective of Zeno's acquisition of Three Monkeys, but not all acquisitions have the same plan behind them, do they? But just go on.
I was just going to say on that final point, acquisitions happen because normally you want something that somebody else has. And if there is that mutuality, which is what I was getting at with the benefit, the career progression, the growth, the opportunities for clients, then the logic behind the coming together of organizations is unquestionable. If you can get that right, then I think the cultural piece will come next.
Yeah, it's quite interesting actually that you've retained the Three Monkeys name, haven't you? It's, I would not all, but most. What was it? It was 6, 7 years ago now. I can't quite remember, but a lot of the times that it's those that brands sometimes get consumed into the wider brand. But you've obviously decided to keep the Three Monkeys positioning.
There was and is lots of juice in the brand name.
Yeah.
But never say never, Ben. Never
No,
say
oh, I've messed up there. I've mentioned something, or maybe I should, I don't know. So go on then. You've had a few in-house roles. Has that changed how you've your approach to work within an agency? Is that did that help?
it did. And for anyone who is, not long in the tooth like me and has a plan, if you can include going in-house as part of your plan, I would absolutely recommend it, because it gives you a complete perspective, I think, on agency roles and agency importance within an in-house setting. And this is something I talk to my folks about, that when we're talking to clients and dealing with clients on a daily basis, we only see a very small proportion of what is going on in their world. And for us, that is the most important thing. But clients are battling and dealing with all sorts of other stuff, as that we just simply don't see. And having that appreciation, I think, of the wider field that clients are navigating is helpful, because it helps you contextualize where you might be and what's important. So, and also, I was at Guinness for 2 years, so only one in-house role, but I'd never worked within a big sophisticated marketing department, and you understand the dynamics much more. You understand the tensions, you understand the decision-making processes, how the component parts of a big organization like that come together. That's helpful for you if you go back into agency, because you've got an appreciation of the conversations that need to happen, that perhaps the sort of attitudinal bravery that organizations need to get behind agencies and what they want to do and their ideas, the relationships between the finance guys and the marketing guys and the legal guys, which again, unless you've been in an organization like that, you just don't appreciate. You don't know why your ideas aren't getting through, probably because there's a lawyer somewhere saying, well, if we do that, we're going to, get into trouble. All of that, I think, completes and helps educate good PR people. So if you can go in-house, go for a while.
We should do a whole different podcast on general counsel lawyers and their impact on PR creativity. But anyway, last question for me. You've got a nice look, looking at your experience. You've worked both network firms and independent firms. Just give us a little insight, we're almost out of time, on what it's like, the differences in working for the two. What are the best and worst of each?
Oh, God, I mean, we need a bottle of wine to do this one. That working for the networks, there's the scale and the heft that comes with it. And when I was at Porto Novelli,
The scale and the heft. Right.
Lovely word. And it, being based in Bankside with all of those agencies together, if you wanted to collaborate, you got in a lift, you went upstairs and you did it. And there was something thrilling about being a part of that with the energy that comes with it. And I really enjoyed that. What I like about independent agencies, as you'd expect, there is freedom, more agency to affect change. You can move quickly. There is less operational glue or sort of head scratching a little bit at times. And what I like about Zeno, when I moved, there was the scale of the business that I was comfortable with. And I enjoyed, picking up the phone and talking to colleagues around the world. But there was opportunity to maneuver. And so in a way, it's the best of both worlds. Working for a scaled agency that's independent is brilliant.
I just knew you were going to say that. You had the best of both worlds. Halfway through that answer, I knew what she was going to say at the end. I was going to wrap that one up.
Is there a cliche bingo card that you have on your desk somewhere? I've just hit the jackpot.
Definitely not, but it's not a bad idea. Joe Patterson, UK Managing Director of 3Monkeys Zeno, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.